And for folks who don't know, the Free State Project is a movement of voluntary human action where we are trying to concentrate libertarians in the state of New Hampshire.
I think we've got done more in the last decade than every other libertarian movement combined has accomplished in the last 5 decades.
Are my friends and my neighbors who are willing to stand against tyranny, make their voices heard, and have a goddamn impact.
You have a problem where too many people are afraid to say what they believe in, but they'll actually do something about it. If you're afraid to stand outside the TSA line and piss off 97% of people who are waiting to just take the bar and build it up their ass in 5 seconds, then you're probably not ever going to make the change.
Free State Project, again, it's 1% of the Free State movement.
I am a friend of the Free State Project.
And would you encourage people to check it out?
Absolutely. Check it out. Find out. If you like it, join and continue the effort.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, libertarians, anarchists, movers, natives, and those on your way, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Free State Live. You can learn all about how you can live free or die in the Free State of New Hampshire. First and foremost, it's time to welcome back your awesome hosts. Joining me, as always, Manchester Meme Lord and internet personality extraordinaire Bill Barger, West Side's best Meme Lord. How's it going, Bill?
Going good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Finally got your mic set right.
And
back for, I think, the third week in a row without missing a week at this point, everyone's favorite libertarian extraordinaire and queen kill, Carla Gehrig. Carla, how are you?
Hi, guys. I'm happy to be here. Setting the record 3 weeks in a row. Yes.
Well, joining us this week, our special guest, New Hampshire State Representative and, at this point, secessionist extraordinaire, Representative Mike Sylvia. Mike, how are you?
Thank you, Justin. I'm doing great. Good to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. It's going to be a fun conversation, I'm sure. It's been a topic of national attention and national divorce. It's been trending. It's been in the news. It's been in the media. It's been seeing support from really weird sides of the political spectrum, with people like Sarah Silverman coming out in favor of national divorce. But Joe Rogan hasn't yet. It's kind of weird. But with the growing secession movements in California, Texas, Alaska, right here at home in New Hampshire, Mike, you're the prime sponsor of CACR 32, proposed constitutional amendment for New Hampshire to peaceably secede from the Union. You're going about it a little bit different way than they're doing anywhere else, and a way that might actually have, I don't know, a shot at succeeding if it were to pass legal muster. So, I don't know. Tell us a little bit about, like, what possessed you to pursue secession in the first place?
All right. Well, thanks for listening to my story. I was not a big secessionist to start with. It was not my idea, but I was approached by several folks, the New Hampshire Independence folks, and they were like looking for a sponsor. And it's like, I don't know. Recently over the summer, there seems to be more and more reasons that make it, you know, kind of legitimate. We look at what DC is doing. And, you know, if I compare that, you know, I'm sorry, all of you libertarian folks, I'm kind of a constitutional guy. You know, it's a good document. Unfortunately, it doesn't defend itself. And we see that DC has taken that social contract, if you will. I know that make half of your audience scream. But, you know, if you look at it in a serious way as a so-called social contract, it is totally broken by those dear friends down there in DC in so many ways. I suppose we can get into all the ways, you know, the idea was brought to me and I was like, well, you know, this is a question for the people. And that's what a constitutional amendment in New Hampshire is. We don't have a referendum. So this is just a question to be put on a ballot for the people of New Hampshire to say yes or no. And at this point, it's not looking like a whole lot of legislators are going to want that on the ballot. Whether or not they're afraid of having the answer, you know, perhaps it's, you know, it's a minority of Granite Staters that would vote yes on such an amendment. But it might be a little bit scary if you had 30%, 40% that said, yeah, it's time to have the discussion.
Why do you think people would be like afraid of hearing that, Mike?
Well, you know, this is not a conversation we really want to have out there in the legislature. We like the way things are going. We get lots of money from D.C. They take plenty of money from the people of New Hampshire and, you know, cycle it through and give us back some of it with strings. So, you know, it would really change things. It would stop people and make them think, you know, what is a sovereign state? And what does that mean? And, you know, clearly we are just, you know, a local district office for D.C., just like when, you know, the king was ruling over the colonies. They were not independent nations as we declared ourselves in 1776. So, yeah, they don't want to hear that, the answer to that. How many people are really seriously thinking about it? You know, when Trump got elected, the left went mental and, you know, they wanted to, you know, flee to Canada or, you know,
I believe the term is deranged, within the D family of insults that we all like to throw around.
It was a syndrome.
Yeah. Politicians are not allowed to say those things, you know, those are cancellation terms. So that, you know, when Trump got elected, there was outrage by the left, and, you know, what, California was ready to go then. They've been talking about it for a really long time, and not from the right. They're like pretty serious. They put a lot of time into this. I've talked to the folks out there, and they've got a pretty serious movement. Ours is getting going. I think, there needs to be a lot of thought. The amendment that we put in is very bare bones. It's very simple. It doesn't spell out all the details that everybody wants, you know, the answers to the questions. And so in that way, it's a lot like the way that the Constitution is built. It doesn't lay out specifics in absolute long detail. That's what statutes and laws are for. The Constitution is really just an overview, a guiding principle, and says, you know, let's go this way or that way, and this is how we're going to run things. So,
And it's really starting a conversation in a lot of ways, or at least that's how I've been looking at it. You know, some of us have been talking about these issues since the inception, certainly of the Free State Project. I mean, the threat of secession was something that was openly talked about in the founding essay. Now, it was never part of the Free State Project's charter or anything, part of the pledge or anything like that. But certainly for me, that was a something that appealed to me was this notion that, wow, you know, if we can't reform DC, and I think people would be hard pressed for anyone to make a cogent case for anything that's happening in the swamp or in the hellmouth that is constitutional. And so if they're not abiding by their founding documents, I think it's entirely reasonable to say, well, let's ask the question. One of the things I hear a lot from naysayers are they're literally saying, but you're not allowed to start this conversation. Like, they're upset even about the notion of saying, but can we look at this? Can we hold our government to account in some way? So as you mentioned, Mike, the language itself is very short. And in order for it to be a constitutional amendment, first of all, it would need to pass the House and the Senate. So that would be people's legislators voting for it. I believe that's 3/5 of the House. And then in order for it to be a constitutional amendment, I think it's 2/3 of the voting body. Now, we have passed constitutional amendments in New Hampshire over the past 12 years that I've been here, at least. And in fact, in 2018, we passed a really good privacy constitutional amendment that I would love to see people start to sue on with all this COVID madness. But it's a very high bar. So, you know, again, for the people who are like, this sounds insane, it's like, we are just simply saying, can we ask this question? Can we talk about it? So the first step, Mike, was you had the hearing in front of, I know it's Veterans Affairs. What's the
Federal Relations?
Yeah, state and federal relations and veterans affairs. Yeah.
So can you sketch for folks back home sort of what that looked like a little bit? And then, you know, maybe if you could recall some of your opening remarks, that would be pretty interesting to hear as well.
Yeah. So the hearing was very well attended by supporters, mainly. There were a couple of dissenters, but certainly packed the room. We didn't bring out enough to force them to take it over to Repsol, which
I think it's also important to note, you said there was a few dissenters, but at least one or two of the dissenters were Free Staters.
Exactly. And so
like, it's important to note that like, this is not a lockstep issue of Free Staters.
It is not, and I think that is important to note. Yeah,
so, you know, we had a good crowd fill the room in COVID land, and of course, you know, we are not, we are free breathers, so that was good. And I don't even know if there was a whole lot of opposition doing their protection theater. By the way, do you get canceled if I say anything bad about COVID?
No, we're 12 minutes in. The AI only checks the first five. So.
Excellent. So we had a good room full of supporters. We had a lot of great testimony on our side. For me, it's about our Constitution. You know, we have the New Hampshire Constitution comes in two parts. The first part is our Bill of Rights. Before they even consider creating a government in part two, they spell out the Bill of Rights. And these are all the rights that are retained to the people, not necessary to make government. And this is a great thing about the New Hampshire Constitution when you compare it to the U.S. Constitution. The U.S. Constitution, Bill of Rights is an afterthought, right? We put it right up front. So that I love that. And Part First, Article 7 gets into the details of really, and let's remember, this is 1784 that the New Hampshire Constitution was created before the U.S. Constitution was approved. So we're under the Articles of Confederation. And it says in Article 7 that only those powers given to the United States of America assembled in Congress, as they call it then, only the powers that are given explicitly are those powers that they can have. So if it's not explicitly given to the United States government, they don't have it. And of course, you know, you couple that with Article 10 of the U.S. Constitution, or the 10th Amendment. It's very clear that we are reserving a lot of rights to our people. And when we look today at what passes as constitutional through the Supreme Court, and really, they're the ones that gave themselves the power. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't even have it. And, you know, Michael Bolton, the 10th Amendment Center, would cover that issue really, really well. The Supreme Court should not even be making these judgments. If it comes down to a serious question between the union, between the states, then the states should be settling those things, you know, some other form other than, you know, these, you know, the best five out of nine. That just doesn't cut it. And, you know, these are theoretically the greatest minds in law. And, you know, frankly, if they don't come down 9-0, then it's not a decision as far as I'm concerned. It's just their opinion. I'm totally off track. Sorry.
So we had the hearing. And as you said, there was like a fantastic turnout. There was good energy in the room. I definitely think that the people who were supporting the bill had the better arguments. I was kind of surprised, and this is just a quick anecdote, but there was, you know, there's this weird stacking that they do, right? That drives me nuts. And I think we should write a bill that says whenever there's a public hearing, the public gets to testify until they're satisfied. And then anyone who's a statist can then come and tell their story afterwards, right? Because it's done the flip side way. First they do any, you know, government official, then they do all the lobbyists, and then they do the public. So from the get-go, we are basically being told, yeah, you know, out of all these people here, we think you, the people who, you know, we ostensibly work for, are the least important. So so there was a state rep, Brody Deshay, I think is how you say it, who went up there, and he made some rather troubling arguments that basically in a nutshell went down to this. I consulted the oracles of the Constitution who all happened to say that you cannot do this. And if you do this, we're going to say you're committing treason. So we'll put a pin in that. So then they went through other people who were also in opposition to the bill. And as someone mentioned, we did have a state, a free stater actually testify in opposition to the bill. I think that's great because I think it's important for people to understand it isn't lockstep. There isn't a monolith. There isn't right. someone telling people you must vote this way. We are not the Democrats. And so it's people have different strong opinions about this. But so, my favorite person who testified in opposition was a gentleman who went up, and I was surprised because I was like, oh, wait, I thought he was a, you know, from Keene, I thought. And so goes up and it's like testifying in opposition of the bill. And I was like, that can't be right. I was kind of trying to be like, hey, L, I think you got it wrong. But then they started speaking with a British accent. And their position was, well, if you're going to argue that this, if you're arguing that they cannot secede, then we are clearly still under the British crown. We are a colony of England, and we must, go back to that. And I thought it was really clever and really cute that they did that.
At that point, you confirmed 100% they were from Keene.
So I have two questions. The first is, what was the opposition like in terms of, you said the first people that spoke were the reps and then lobbyists and then the people got to speak? Was it kind of the same amount of support or dissent in those three crowds? Was that
No. It was clearly, the supporters were clearly in control there. Brody Deshay, a state representative on the committee, he got up and spoke for probably 20 minutes.
It was 27 minutes because the guy next to me was filming and I checked the clock before I went
right.
up.
So he had plenty of time to make a, I don't want to be too disparaging of his words, but you know, this argument based on, you know, the Supremes are the Supremes and they, yeah. anything they say is the word of God. And, you know, the, Civil War settled everything. And, you know, yeah. you are not free to leave. You are held hostage here in the United States.
And, so, and suggesting otherwise is treason, of course.
Yeah. So let me just jump to the treason part. And, I need to put this out there because, part first, still part of our Bill of Rights, we have Article 30, which is freedom of speech. And I'm going to read this for you. Sorry, but, it needs to be done. It's short. The freedom of deliberation, speech, and debate in either house of the legislature is so essential to the rights of the people that it cannot be the foundation of any action, complaint, or prosecution in any other court or place whatsoever. So, you know, there was a bill put in by another non-friend of liberty from Wolfboro to try and reprimand anyone that would walk this path. And, you know, it's already in our Constitution. So anything that, you know, people want to talk about retribution for doing this, they want to say that it's against the U.S. Constitution. Well, I don't care too much about the U.S. Constitution. The New Hampshire Constitution came first, and we did not give them the right to judge. This is in part first of our Constitution. My right as a legislator to put forward any idea, any debate, is absolutely constitutional. It is protected. I hate constitutional rights. I hate saying that. It's rights protected by the Constitution. We should always try and say it the long way, the way it should be. The shorthand makes it sound like the Constitution gives you your rights. You have rights, they're by nature. So I have absolutely the right to put forward this legislation. And for those who, perhaps we have a couple of legislators watching here tonight, to think that you can be sanctioned for voting for this thing, it's silly. It's absolutely ridiculous. I've already been reprimanded once for not taking PC training at the House. That was bunk, and I wear my little reprimand with my badge of honor.
But of course, the argument that they're trying to make there is scare tactics. So it's basically, I mean, it's their obsession with fear and fear mongering. And to be honest, I do think it kind of worked because I had a sense on the committee that we should have had at least a little bit of support. Based, you know, DeLimas was on the committee. I felt she would probably vote our way. And so I was very surprised because it did come out of committee with the ITL and everyone voted against it. And I think it's because of this very calculated political maneuvering of the scare tactic of telling people you're going to get in trouble, but you're going to get in trouble with like a capital T because it's not, you know, that treason's a scary word, right? And so it's dirty fighting. And that to me is a tell as well. I believe the same as you, Mike, that they're afraid of the answer because if you, and I said this to the Democrats specifically on the committee, I said, look, if you have tweeted anything or talked about on any level about voters' rights and democracy, I mean, we are a republic, but they like to throw their mob rule around a lot, right? If we're going to, if they want to frame it that way, this is purely something to put a question in front of the people. And to the people who say, but it's so short and you don't have a plan and whatever, these things are solvable problems. The first question is, what do real Granite Staters want? Not, yeah, you know, what the 10% that are clinging on the outsides to the party want, but well, real was, people who lost their jobs, who have been forced to get experimental treatment, who, you know, were locked down, people who couldn't go to funerals, to their churches, to their gatherings. I mean, the government screwed up big time. People are mad and they are too afraid to see how mad people are.
Well, that was one of the things I felt the need to address with my testimony that day. Is I had gone not planning to testify. Like, my original plan was to stream and do commentary later that night because I figured there'd be plenty of people testifying. They didn't need to hear from me. And then Representative DeShay spoke and I'm like, that pissed me off. And again, I think this highlights the difference in approach that a lot of Free Staters have. Is Mike identifies as a constitutionalist and wants to approach this from a constitutional perspective. And I got up to tell Representative DeShay, I don't give a shit about your constitution. If you want to label me a seditionist, I'll wear it proudly. To me, that was a different approach, but it just ticked me off. But another state rep on the committee, a Democrat state rep, had asked a question earlier on, and he said, why don't you just do this as a referendum that's non-binding to get a taste of where people are? And I had to stand up to testify as I felt one of the more familiar people with election law in the room. Like, you know that state reps have opposed giving New Hampshire citizens the right to referendum 8 times in the last 16 years. Like, it's been proposed almost every legislative cycle as a constitutional amendment, and it's been shot down unilaterally because the Democrats and establishment Republicans don't believe the people should have their voices heard.
This is interesting, right? Because I'm wondering, you know, there's some pushback to this bill, and it sounds like the reps care more about what the reps, not all the reps, but like, it's like the ones who are against this, they want, for their own opinions, they don't want to ask the people. Is there a pushback because certain people who might be, you know, Democratic or maybe just anybody, your job would change, wouldn't it? If New Hampshire were to leave the union and you were a state rep, wouldn't your job change a little? Is that feasible? That's here? Would there be pushback?
Great question.
It'd be more responsibility, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be a different sort of thing. One of the things that some of the people that study this sort of thing is, well, what about our Senate? Our Senate is elected by districts, and what exactly do they do? You know, the original structure for the U.S. Senate was to have the states represented. So the senators would be representing the states, and the representatives would be representing the people. And so in a better constitutional sort of that traditional thinking would be that our senators would be elected perhaps from counties, and counties would be more like states are to the United States. So you would have a little bit of division, and division is good. The problem we have with government is everybody wants to just kind of go along, get along. I've been pushing the limits of that in a few different areas. And frankly, at the local level, you know, we have this little issue. I'm chairman of the county delegation, and our county happens to own a ski area. So that has turned into a rather big issue lately.
Are they requiring masks to ski outside?
Interesting. More than they ought to, but it's been. But the issue there is how that is run and what the structure is, and it the commission that runs Gunstock is a public body, but they would prefer to run it as their own private operation, and that's just not right. And
sounds
so,
like they should buy it from the county.
Well, they can't.
But you know, they can't get their subsidies, right?
Maybe if we secede, we'd be essentially free of. It was bought during the Works Progress administration, and so it's got tied up in various land deeds. So it's a big problem with the federal government. So I suppose if the federal government goes away, we can perhaps have our ski area and sell it, and just get rid of it and put it back on the tax rolls. But it, you know, running it's you know. I hate to say the word, but you know, good government would be nice considering what we have now. Right. And I know Carl has been involved with the Right to Know quite a bit, and you know, that's a huge problem. They don't want transparency. They don't want you to see what's going on. And right down to every little town, your little select board, they have their little clique. They run their town, not for the benefit of the people. And, you know, they work hard. Some of them do. Some of them are, you know, there is some integrity there. But there's a lot that are just like, well, I'm working so hard, I'm going to make this benefit myself. And you can get that attitude if you're jaded and you've been in for a while. And you know, that's one of the things that I really have to fight against is really getting absorbed into the system. It's really hard.
So can we do some brainstorming, just because a lot of times when people hear this idea, I think first they're just shocked to their core. Then you know, they're like, well, these people must be entirely insane. Then hopefully if they've, you know, met us and worked with us and dealt with us over the years, they're like, no, they're just very solution driven and kind of frustrated and have genuinely, I think everyone here tried in various ways to affect change, and it's, you know, TikTok, it's just taking too long. So if you were to sketch the like most positive way this would look, like I always call it things like, oh, it could be like a Yankee Hong Kong or a Yankee Switzerland. I think Switzerland is actually a pretty good example. We're they have the friends. Cannons, the small representative government and stuff. But you know, like, for each one of you three, maybe we could go, what would an ideal independent little New Hampshire look like for you?
For me, I think it's simple, because I think there's an example that exists already, and I think there's a thriving example. And when I was asked about it after giving my testimony against Representative DeShay's insanity, I was asked what I thought how things would work. And to me, I look at like what the United States could be as more of like what the European Union was supposed to be. And the European Union has gone, again, it's worse than the United States and how it infringes on the sovereignty of its member states at this point. Which, I mean, it's a really high bar to be worse than the United States at that. But the European Union has tried its damnedest to do it. But Europe has had small micronations that have held out their independence for centuries without being part of an empire and have been successful for so long because they've embraced libertarian values at its core. Freedom of movement, freedom of work, freedom of speech, freedom of money, allowing people to use whatever money and whatever markets work best for them. And you have examples like Switzerland and Liechtenstein, who have completely different government structures, but share a border and are completely peaceful with each other and are very small countries that could be overwhelmed militarily at the drop of a hat, but nobody cares to invade them because they're friendly with everybody. They trade with everybody. They conduct banking business with everybody, and they respect their citizens' rights. In fact, Liechtenstein, the crown prince of Liechtenstein, attempted to abolish the monarchy at one point, and he's like, I'm sick of this. This is dumb. We shouldn't have a monarchy. And he put it to a ballot measure, and the people said, nah, you're doing a good job. You're stuck. We don't want you going anywhere. Then he wrote a big, long book about how Murray Rothbard was such a great inspiration and Ron Paul was the closest thing to a good government leader in the world. And the people of Liechtenstein refused to let him retire and resign. They're like, we'll keep the monarchy until you're dead because you're awesome. And in response to them not letting him abolish the monarchy, he forced through a constitutional amendment that gave the right of every, not just province, but every neighborhood, any contiguous entity in Liechtenstein to secede by majority vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually met him. I met him at Freedom Fest, and he only had one security guard. And I was really surprised because I was like, he's a king, or he was a prince, you know? So that notion, right, where you actually give and live your principles and stand by them. So he's saying, look, you know, I think everyone should be able to secede down to the smallest unit. And I think that's actually philosophically kind of important to think about, is when you think about independence, right? We could talk about national independence, but also personal independence. And I think, you know, there's also a dividing line between sort of the people who are rugged individualists and the nanny statists on where their appetite is for an idea like this. But staying positive, Mike, do you have sort of a sense of what you think it should look like?
Well, I came into this late, and I don't come with any particular idea. But as things have come to me, I think, you know, you have to look at some of the big control mechanisms. Money is a huge issue. What happens to all these people that are on Social Security? Certainly the working people who are freed from Social Security and having to pay into it, along with the federal income tax. That's a big freeing issue. But when it comes down to money, once again, you know, the national government used to be federal, has given over our money issuing to the Federal Reserve Bank. Clearly, I know that there's a lot of people in this audience that are thinking Bitcoin, Bitcoin, Bitcoin. Personally, I'm still not sold that it's not a Trojan horse. I've been resisting this for a long time. I got a little bit, and, you know, that's all good and fun. But I'm not entirely sold on the Bitcoin thing. But certainly the idea is valid. And if it were, you know, there have been ideas even before secession of a Bank of New Hampshire. So not the Bank of New Hampshire, we already have one of those corporations, but a state bank. You know, that's an idea, and real money is a real issue. And as you know, wars are created to put people in debt and therefore tie them to whatever the IMF might want to push down on people. So money is a really huge issue that would need to be solved right up front, I think.
And so one of the ideas I've actually heard is to allow for competing currencies. And then people were like, but how would that work? And I was like, well, I used to travel in the 80s when you would have like a traveler's check and you had money lenders and people would just do it. And of course, now we have technology and computers and, you know, like all this tech on our phones. So these are totally surmountable problems. I mean, to be honest, I have not, you know, so what would competing currencies look like? It could be gold, silver. One of the people at the event, you know, there are these New Hampshire gold backs. There's gold backed money that's being printed that has actual face value of gold sewn into it.
We have Free State Project metal rounds.
Yep. We've got copper rounds. Exactly. So, you know, someone will throw a criticism and they're like, ha ha, I have stumped you. You will not be able to do this. And it's like, no, all you're doing with curious, smart people is tell me what the problem is and let's figure out a solution. And if we can't figure it out, you know what's this amazing thing that if you just let it work would be awesome? It's called the market, which is millions of brilliant people doing what they think is the smart thing and then letting other people pick the smart thing that they think is smart. Mike thinks Bitcoin is not so smart. I'm hoping that's how I'm going to retire. Who knows, right? So competing currencies. To your point, Mike, just quickly about everyone who asks about the entitlements, right? And I'm like, first of all, it's those people's money. So I think the federal government would have to have a hard time with a straight face saying, you can't get that money. We know that American retirees live in various places across the world, including in Mexico, and they still receive their Social Security. So unless the US government is literally just straight up gonna steal their money and punish them, I think there are better ways, right? So we've talked about this in framing, and I always say the government's a bully. And so people need to look when they are making their counter arguments. You have to ask yourself, wow, does this sound like an abuser? Like they'll literally say, you can't leave me. And I'm like, that I've heard, you know, people have heard that argument before. It's not a good one when someone's like, I know I am, I'm hurting you, I'm abusing you, I'm bullying you, but you can't leave me. So I just wanted to make sure I got that out there. Bill, do you have a vision or like something you're curious or?
Bill's the native here, and I'm real curious to hear how a native envisions a independent New Hampshire.
Well, first off, we're gonna have a tiny nuke powering every home. I would love to see nuclear innovation come to New Hampshire. You know, it's about time somebody does it. And isn't there some bills going through? So we'll have nukes, crypto. Everybody's gonna be carrying a gun. It'll be a tax haven. You won't have to like get special legal licenses to cut hair or any of that stuff. You know, all those things. To me, though, really, it's gonna be so much of the stuff that people already want to do in New Hampshire. It'll just be easier to do. It's not like we're gonna create some crazy new place. It's just gonna get a lot of things out of the way. So, I don't know that I would inject some special bill flavored ingredients to New Hampshire. I think it's doing pretty well. It would just be a lot more prosperous and it would progress quicker. I can't predict where it would go exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the beauty. And I'm so glad you mentioned nuclear. That's something I've actually been thinking about for a long time. And now I'm actively trying to start to put people together. And I sat in on a talk a couple of weeks ago, and it's really fascinating. Just quick asides. There's a lot of like really frothy, interesting things happening in nuclear. And I was curious because a lot of times you're like, why? It's kind of like the aliens, right? And you're like, why is everyone talking about aliens? And you're like, oh, they declassified a bunch of things out of the Navy. So the reason nuclear is this frothy is because they declassified a lot of things out of from 50 years ago. So when they picked the wrong one, right, they were like, yep, let's go with the weapons and the killing people instead of the like nice green stuff that, you know, would have made the planet not hotter and the world a little better. They can never pick the right one. It's like booze or weed. Let's do booze. You know, I mean, they're just notoriously bad at making decisions. But with nuclear, I think we have a massive opportunity in New Hampshire. And for folks who are watching this or people who are well connected in this sector, let's get the right people talking to the right people in the state. We have Seabrook, that fight has been fought, and there's a license for the second reactor. We could put a green reactor in that actually uses the spent waste from the first reactor, yep, and literally just create clean energy. And then, and I know my libertarian brethren will be like, this is not entirely principled, but I'm going to become a queen and this is how you do it. We give everyone in New Hampshire free green energy and we let them export it to the Eastern Seaboard. The cost of doing business,
yep,
here is help our people, help the Granite Staters. So they're getting something out of this exchange as well. So on top of being like, I don't know, $35,000 wealthier because you're not paying federal income tax to go bomb brown people somewhere, you are keeping your money. You are going to be richer, more peaceful, more prosperous. And not that much needs to change. And anyone who's listening from Maine, come with us.
No, I think the point you make there, not much needs to change. And that is what I think a lot of people are missing in the secession debate. And when, like, whenever I bring up secession, everyone always brings the non-libertarians I talk to, they bring up the Civil War. And I'm like, no, you're thinking about it wrong, because I'm not talking about the Civil War. I'm talking about Brexit.
Right. Like,
I'm not exactly, talking... Yeah. I'm not talking about secession as in the Civil War. I'm talking about secession as in Brexit, as in the Scottish referendum, as in the Northern Irish referendum, as in the people in the indigenous tribes in Spain trying to declare their independence, peaceful movements that can happen peacefully, and self-governing autonomous regions who already like have a system in place to handle it. Like New Hampshire is by any respect a self-governing autonomous region of the United States. We have a local government. We have a state government. And if we were to secede, while the immediate responsibilities of that state government may change overnight, the infrastructure is in place for them to handle that change. And when I was talking to Daniel Miller last week, he's running for lieutenant governor in Texas on a platform of seceding Texas from the Union. He posed it to me, and the pitch he told me he's been giving people in Texas is something I think we really need to adopt, because he's telling people, stop thinking about secession as leaving the Union. Mm. Start thinking about secession as if you are already an independent country. You have your own military. It's the National Guard. You have your own government. It's your state government. You have your own commander-in-chief. It's your governor. You have your own economy. You have your own infrastructure. All this being said, if you were an independent country, would you vote to join the United States as it is today? That's, and if the answer to that is no, how can you oppose leaving?
Oh, I love that. That's great. I'm going to steal that.
Yeah, one of the things that I'd like to mention about the whole idea of secession, and frankly, a lot of it is much more driven, I think, by the corruption of D.C. I think that all 50 states are very much less than pleased with D.C. In varying degrees, I'm sure. But they have so little respect for the Constitution, which, you know, a lot of people hold in extremely high regard, and rightly so. I mean, it was a great foundation for the country. By the way, it was the first peaceful revolution in America when we overthrew the Articles of Confederation and peacefully installed the U.S. Constitution, right? There was no war. There was no bloodshed. It can be done peacefully. But the issue is, you know, you look at D.C. and what they're doing and how that comports with the Constitution. And one of the issues that came up in the testimony at the hearing was our veterans. And Frankly, this is a huge issue. And how would they feel?
How would the
Civil War veterans feel? And particularly after World War II, when we decided that we no longer needed to, Congress critters abdicated their duty to declare war and sent many thousands, hundreds of thousands, perhaps, young men into war without declaring it, without having the courage to just freaking declare it. That is huge cowardice, and that is disrespectful of the lives that were lost. And, you know, that's something that folks really need to stop and think about.
And to be honest, you know, it's also a emotional pressure point, right? Like people like to manipulate is a strong word. I don't want to ascribe malice to anyone who was bringing up the point that day, but it's again a sort of way to, instead of talking about the actual practicality of it, or at least saying, let's just test this idea, it's a way of bringing in emotion, right? Now you're disrespecting dead soldiers. That's a very touching, difficult bar, right? I love the young lady who kind of, you know, Al was saying, you know, she had said her father and grandfather had both served, and Al was, you know, saying, you know, thank you for your service. And she just straight up said, my grandfather wouldn't appreciate that. It destroyed his life. He, you know, he had a terrible experience. War is awful. And so I think that Democrats there were actually, because a lot of people who testified did testify about unconstitutional wars that we've been dragged into over the past, you know, 20, 30 years. And I think they were surprised. I could see a little bit of acceptance there where they were like, oh, a lot of people are actually testifying that we don't like, you know, when we say they're breaking the Constitution, that's a really big one for libertarians. It's like, you can't just keep going to war and killing all these people for profit. It's gross. Please stop, you know? And so I hope people understand that is where this thought process comes from. Everyone everyone I know who is talking about this or pushing this is coming from a place of, can we make something better? Because here's the other thing, and it just, as a lawyer, it drives me insane about the Supreme Court, is, you know, stare decisis, decisis, the precedent system, right? So they say, we made a decision, therefore it is, right? I'm back at the oracle of the Constitution. And then they're literally saying, we can never make a mistake. So we are always right. And it's like, well, you know, sometimes, like all humans, we get things wrong, and then you should be able to change things. So the argument I hear from the other side is just, it can't be like that because it's never been like that. And so I want to encourage people to really think, put on your problem-solving hat and go, gee, if New Hampshire were to be a country, how would that work? So one of the questions people will say is, would you need a passport to travel to Boston or to go to Portland, Maine? And I'm like,
no. What a segue, Carla. What a great segue into answering some of the questions I've starred and put aside.
Oh, good. Okay. I'm just rambling. No one's talking. I'm like, hey, I'll just keep going.
Richard Kahn had asked on Facebook earlier, and I bring this up, and I think it's a great discussion point for a small discussion. How would travel to other states be handled? And I think that's a really fantastic question. And unfortunately, I think the answer to that is up to the United States, not up to New Hampshire.
Well, I mean, but in states in Europe, they have different visa sections. I mean, there are certain countries, I think it's called the Shenzhen, which sounds like something in China, but it's actually
Swiss and Germany.
Swiss, like all those countries. And so depending on where you are, like I jumped off the plane once and we were late for another one, and they literally had like just a little desk that they pulled that said passports, and it was just some dude, and we were on the runway and they were just doing our passport controls. And I was like, what was that? Because, ooh, all kinds of opportunities there. But someone was like, no, it's because you're in this visa zone. Yep. So assuming, again, if you go in with the assumption that every problem is surmountable and whatever they throw at you, there is a peaceful, logical, reasoned solution. If you go in with that, all these things are things that can be dealt with. The only time you run into a problem is if you have an asshole, abusive partner who's like, no, 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 right? And then that becomes a problem. So you have to look at the players and go, who are the friendly, nice people who are just kind of going, we would stop, like to stop getting stolen from and go paying to have people murdered. And the other side's going, you can't leave me and I'll hurt you if you do and I will make your life miserable. I mean, people were talking about that they would bomb you. I'm like, well, doesn't that tell you a reason why you should leave? That they would put economic sanctions on you. I'm like, doesn't that tell you?
Yep.
You know, it's just, there's only one bad guy in this scenario, and it's not anyone who's advocating for a peaceful change for something that is not working.
Right. And just a little word for the youngsters in the crowd, which is everybody but me. Once upon a time, you could go to Canada with a driver's license. You didn't need a passport.
I remember that. I'm only 32, and I remember going to Canada with no identification as a teenager and just walking across the border and them asking, where's your identification? I'm like, I'm 16. They're like, oh, okay, bye.
Yeah. So really not an issue.
Yeah. So another question that keeps popping up, Diane McKenzie on the Facebook live chat has been asking a lot of questions about Social Security, social welfare, a lifeline for elderly that can't work and weren't able to save enough to survive after retirement. Also for workers that paid in deserve to collect. And Diane, I think I'm actually uniquely qualified to answer this question because I've worked in the Medicare and Social Security system so long. You are 100% correct that workers who've paid in deserve to collect, and workers who paid in will continue to collect. That's been codified into U.S. federal law for a very long time, that U.S. citizens who live overseas, as long as they met the qualifications to receive their Social Security benefit, will continue to receive it. U.S. Social Security system pays out to expatriates living in Mexico, in Korea, in Japan, in Okinawa, in China, in Hong Kong, even in a ton of them in U.K. and Canada, who receive their Social Security benefit each month. New Hampshire wouldn't need to do anything about that. Now, if New Hampshire would want to pursue creating an alternative to Social Security for its own citizens moving forward, that's a discussion New Hampshire has to have at the legislative level.
And let's remember one other thing about Social Security. Did you need it before the Federal Reserve was created? Before inflation became a regular thing? If you could save money and not have it deteriorate over time, you could save for your retirement, for your golden years. And then, boy, don't get me started on the medical system. You know, all of these things are creations, problems created by government and the money system, really.
And we did have one more big question that I think is directed straight to Mike, and I want to address this one. It's from Be Voluntarist on Odyssey. For those of you not watching on Odyssey, it's our censorship-free platform run by Free Staters, so you should totally check it out. Be Voluntarist on Odyssey asks, Mike, what happens next with the legislative option? When is the next window? Because people are talking about it, and I'm concerned we might miss the window for peace.
Okay, so this one's fairly straightforward. The bill has had its hearing, and in New Hampshire, this is a beautiful part of our legislative process. Every bill gets a hearing as long as the sponsor sticks with it and goes forward with it. So we had our hearing. The committee voted 21-0 to kill it. ITL, as Carla mentioned before, is inexpedient to legislate. So it will go to the floor of the House, and because it's a constitutional amendment, it will have to get a roll call. And there will be an opportunity for speeches, probably short. I think if anybody intends to push that, then the typical way to abbreviate long and frankly, sometimes it's a good thing that some of these long speeches are really quite pointless. But if there are too many speaking or people signed up to speak, then a motion to table is usually the quickest path to getting rid of the issue, in which case there'd be a roll call vote. There would be a parliamentary inquiry allowed for the question, which is a brief statement of why you would support the bill and vote no on the inexpedient to legislate. But after that, I mean, this is open to the discussion. And then the question is, well, can we come up with a better idea for next year? What are the best ways to approach this? Do we need to do what some of the other states have done, Texas, California, and kind of start laying out all the pieces so that when we do finally have the constitutional amendment put forward and taken seriously, that we have the pieces in place to make it happen, to answer the questions that people are really concerned about?
I think it's a great step forward. I think even just getting the conversation started with your bill has been one of the most important things to happen in politics since I've been involved in politics, because it's such a fundamentally important question about individual sovereignty and state sovereignty and one's consent to participate in a system of governance. And the fact that people are having this conversation at the national stage, at the state level, and in public, and it's not confined to libertarian social clubs and anarchists on message boards online. It's everyday people having the discussion at bars and restaurants and celebrities talking about it on their podcasts and on the open airwaves with National Divorce Trending. I'm excited because whether or not the secession amendment passes, I think the fact that what you've done has created this open and public discussion means we're going to see more meaningful discourse around maybe not the subject of secession, but the grievances that led to it, the discussion.
If we can't secede, we can always nullify, right?
It's we'll nullify that federal income tax behavior. try again. Yeah, and I think that's a really important point, Justin, is that, you know, we had a panel at Porkfest 2 years ago, or maybe it was last year, and we had someone from Texas, someone from California, someone from Nexus. There's a Vermont movement. There's various in Oregon. There are parts that are trying to move. But the panelists on this panel, it was a left movement, a right movement, and a libertarian one. And I think that's important. It's not a left right issue. It's not a whatever. It is states' rights versus the federal government and what that role should be.
I joke all the time, like whenever I'm talking to a secessionist, and I joke, they're like, "This is just a libertarian movement." I'm like, "You should go back and watch my interview on my show with Louis Marinelli of CalExit, because I went into that interview thinking that like she was just another anarchist libertarian who wants secession, and it's an hour and a half of me and him arguing and debating because we don't agree on anything except secession and states' rights. It turns out that he is just a progressive leftist who thinks Sacramento is better than DC. And he admits it's a very low bar, but Sacramento is better than DC. And I couldn't agree with him more. I'm like, "You're right. Sacramento is better than DC. We'll leave it at that." It's fantastic that this is not a partisan issue. This is a people issue.
Exactly. Yeah.
So this has been a fun conversation. It's been an awesome conversation. Mike, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
You're welcome, and let's put the question to the people.
Absolutely. That's the most important part. Everybody watching, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for watching. If you're not in New Hampshire, come visit soon. Liberty Forum is coming up first weekend of March. It's sold out. Sorry. I'd usually tell you to go get tickets now, but we are sold out for Liberty Forum, so there are no more. But check in the Facebook group, check in the Discord. People who might not be able to make it might be willing to sell some of their tickets, so there's still an opportunity to come. Dennis Pratt is organizing a Liberty bus tour. I need to get the information for that, put it in the description of the video, but the night before Liberty Forum starts, or the day before Friday, they're doing a Liberty bus tour for people coming from out of state to visit and get a tour of the area. So, like, if you're thinking about moving, that's a great time to get a tour of the area and see where you might land, meet some of your new future neighbors, and get involved in the community. And if you do come for a visit for any extended period of time, check out fsp.org/calendar. FSP.org/calendar. I dare you to find another calendar as packed with liberty and libertarian events anywhere in the world. It's, you cannot go a day in New Hampshire without something happening. Just last night, we had the 500th crypto meetup, and it was an amazing turnout, a huge crowd. It was absolutely awesome. And this is a great way to network. If you're a new mover, check it out. Get plugged into your community, meet your neighbors. If you're planning on moving, this is a great time to see what community might be the best fit for you and where you're going to land. And if you are moving and you're on your way and you need help moving, check out Welcome Wagon. That'll get you plugged in. That'll get you connected with your new neighbors. They can help you unpack. They can help you move. They'll bring you to your first potluck on the first Tuesday of every month in Manchester, where you get to meet the community, get involved, and see where you can help. And last but not least, if you want to support the Free State Project, go to fsp.org/give. You can always give to the Free State Project. We use your money efficiently. It's to help get the message of liberty in our lifetime to as many people as we can, and get people like yourselves to New Hampshire to help us make it happen. Carla, anything else that I'm forgetting?
No, just that everything I said tonight was my personal opinion and has nothing to do with the Free State Project.
Yes, mine too. Bill, anything we're forgetting?
I think I'm good.
All right. Mike, again, thank you so much for joining us. And until next time, everybody, be free.
Peace out.
Good night.